Cinema Jaws sponsored by Double Knockout. Double Knockout is a website focused on showing visitors the best of combat sports from all over the world. MMA, boxing, kickboxing, karate, BJJ, taekwondo, and other sports. Big events or local amateur shows are all featured at their website. Please visit their website, double-knockout.com, and we thank them for their sponsorship of Cinema Jaw.
And by
Social Boxster. Are you missing a laptop key? Did your kids pull it off your laptop? ReplacementLaptopKeys.com got you covered. They sell individual replacement laptop keys for laptops from Apple to Toshiba. They guarantee a perfect fit and finish. Fix your laptop keyboard today. And we thank them for their sponsorship of Cinema Jaw. You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever. Recorded on location this week at Pippin's Wine Bar in Chicago. My name's Rye the Movie Guy, and with me is
Matt Kay. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Rye, we flip the script and get really weird as we cover our top five bizarre movies.
This intro was already bizarre.
It is really bizarre. I feel like this is an out-of-body experience for me.
I agree. What am I doing sitting over on this couch?
I don't know. We have literally changed positions here on the show, both physically and, you know, our roles on the show. So I'm going to be running things, and Rye, you're going to be doing the color commentary. Can you handle that?
I think I can. Finally.
You're going to screw it up.
Finally, I get an easy night.
You get to play trivia. You get to listen.
Whoa. I get to play trivia?
You get to play trivia.
Oh, this is awesome.
Versus the guest.
I'm so happy.
Yes, and we have a very cool guest. We have a lot of cool things this episode of Cinema Jaw. Frank T. Zitti is going to be joining us for the third time. He's a local filmmaker, writer, director, and we can't wait to talk to him. We also have a review of a foreign film, Force Majeure, not to mention trivia. This week we are doing, in honor of bizarre movies, I wanted to think of a bizarre actor, so I thought we'd do Nicolas Cage movie trivia.
Wow, had to make it tricky on me. The one time I get to play trivia, we're going to play Nick Cage.
Yeah, I got to tell you, your job is hard. And last but not least, we also are going to cover An Eye for an Eye with the new movie Focus from Will Smith is coming out, so we're going to check that out.
That's awesome. And thanks for recommending Force Majeure. Great recommendation on your part. I watched it as well.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of recommendations, do you like the wine?
Oh, yeah. The wine here at Pippin's is fabulous. I believe it's a 2011 Pinot Noir. The waitress, Kate, who was around here, recommended it, and yeah. I love it. This is my pad here, Matt.
Nice. I am drinking a 2015 Coors Lita. Have you heard of this one?
As bizarre as it got here on Cinema Jaw, we could not get you to drink wine.
Hey, man, there's only so far I can take things, okay? So anyway, without further ado, let's bring in our guest, Frank T. Zitti. He is a director and writer here in Chicago. He's known for doing Shooter, Cover, and Tinderbox, as well as his web series Black, which has a new season coming out very soon. Frank, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Frank, this is awesome. Like Matt had said at the intro, this is your third time, and you're a fan of the show.
Yes.
And it comes to us just a minute ago that you were actually recommended Cinema Jaw by a friend, a mutual friend, Mac.
Yeah, Mike McNamara, one of the two founders of the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I was talking with him, and he was like, you got to check these guys out. And since that first recording, I have now become completely addicted to the Jaw. Love the taglines, love the trivia. I yell at the radio when the trivia is on, and I never miss an episode. So being back here feels like hosting SNL again, not to go back to last week's episode. But yeah, it's awesome. I can't wait to play.
This is great. This is great. Here's a guy who genuinely listens to us, and it's fantastic to have you back, man.
And good to be here.
And thank you for indulging us with our experimental-ish episode that we're doing here.
I think it's great because I know you both so well. I've already seen Rye's body language change. He's more relaxed. His hand is halfway down his pants. It's perfect. It's awesome.
I hate Ryan's job.
Yes, you've become you're very stiff and rigid.
30
I don't know
seconds
what's going
in,
on.
And I just wish I could sit back and drink a PBR.
Talk about some Marvel something. That's great.
That's right.
That's it.
See? I got the sound box this week, too.
I'm a little nervous.
So, Frank, you got a new web series coming out. It's the second season of Black. Another successful Kickstarter under your belt.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the transition from season one to season two? What's different this time around?
Sure. Well, a little backstory if anybody is listening to this program for the first time for us. But Black is a story about a covert team that's formed after a direct attack against the CIA on American soil. And season one we did about a year and a half ago. We did a Kickstarter for it, and we raised about $10,000. And we shot 6 episodes with a total running time of about 24 minutes. We had a lot of real-life military veterans in the series, and we had some great actors such as Mikel Vega, Wesley John, Max Mullen, different people that have been a part of the project. And we were successful. We loved it. We thought it was great. But the two biggest complaints we got were not long enough, and they wanted bigger. They wanted bigger explosions, more really? Action, more intensity. So
That's surprising, I got to say, because the production value in the first season was amazing. You had choppers, you had gunshots and everything.
Yeah, I've been a fan of action since I was a kid. I grew up on Predator, Die Hard, just the true 90s action genre. And as a filmmaker, writer, director, the one thing I've found to be true for me is know your genre, know what you want to be, know what you want to do as a filmmaker. So I knew action was what I wanted to do. So every project I've done, even a short, a comedy that I did called Robbed, which was in the Midwest Independent Film Festival that Mac actually, he narrated that night. It was about these bank robbers who robbed this bank and the bank's being shut down the very next day. So even though it's a comedy, it still had guns all over it.
I've seen it. I think we showed it at the Indie Incubator Film Festival.
That's right. Yeah. My homage to Heat, my favorite movie of all time. And so I found that action was what I wanted to do. So yeah, I've always wanted the production value to be great. And I will say this, for season two, what we've shot, we always knew that, yes, we've got the guns and the props and the technical prowess and it always looks great. But we really wanted to develop and flesh out the characters more. So what we did for season two was we did a new Kickstarter. We raised $57,000, $7,000 over our goal. Whew,
that's awesome.
It's completely been exhausted. That all that money's gone, and we shot the lights out. We shot for the moon, and we have about 70 minutes of total runtime now, more than double what we had in season one. We shot in 3 different states, 2 different countries. We actually had a crew that was in work in Hong Kong for work in Macau, and we shot a scene there. So we've got beautiful, production value once again.
In Hong Kong?
Yeah, yeah.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they were out there working. The production team I work for, P3 Media Works, a guest you've had on the past is Curtis Gilbert, one of the two brothers. Okay. Corey Gilbert was there for work. And I said, man, this is just, divine intervention. Let's take the same camera gear that you're working on this, this commercial project for and shoot a scene there. And it was perfect. Our same DP is their same DP. So they shot the scene in Macau. And I'm not technically sure geographically where it's at, but I think they were in Hong Kong the next day, and they shot the scene in a high rise with the Hong Kong skyline. It's really cool stuff. Yeah,
that's so awesome. And you know what was cool is you gave us a DVD after season one was done.
Yep.
And if you watched it as I did on the DVD form, it really feels like one really good television show, because it what did it equate to, would you say, a total runtime? You said 20.
Yeah, I mean,
minutes.
We were, what we did for season one was 24 minutes. So if you put commercial breaks in, we were like 1 half-hour episode of a TV pilot.
And this next season almost is like going to be almost a feature length film once you put all the everything together. That's quite the jump.
Yeah, it really was. And it's been a massive exercise for us. We learned so much. We've gained so much experience. I was just going through VFX shots. We have like 75 VFX shots that we have to work on and do massive green screen work. All these things we didn't have in season one to really deal with. But our cast has exploded. We have, before in season one, about 10 people. We've got about 40 people in our cast for season two. So we have a massive team that's formed. The theme focuses on cyber technology and cyber terrorism. And there's this team of mercenaries that's come into the U.S. to try and attack the financial networks of the U.S. So the Black team has gained members, and now they're trying to fight this other team. And we've had some great cameos as well. We had Kerry Tagawa, who was Shang Tsung in the Mortal Kombat movies. He was also in 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves. He was in Flags of Our Fathers, the Clint Eastwood, epic, war epic, as the General Hirohito, I believe. But he's just a phenomenal actor, and he did 2 days for us on our shoot. And that in combination with Andre Jackson, who's played Simba as Lion King for Broadway for 8 years, and all these other actors, Mikel Vega, who's still doing, did the Transformers movie, the new one, Age of Extinction. Mm-hmm. And he was just on Hawaii 5-0, and he was on Dallas, and so we've got a lot of people.
When you get these bigger actors, like you have in season two, scheduling has got to be something that gets really tight. I mean, you've got to really respect these guys' time and get it done, right?
Yeah, we had a lot of stuff to shoot. We put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag, and we learned where to cut. We also had a lot of strange stuff happen. One of our lead actors is a guy named Pete Kelly, who's a cop here in Chicago, but also an actor. He was in Transformers 3 and 4 as well. He was supposed to be with us, and the day before he was supposed to fly to Arizona, he was shot. He actually stopped a home invasion and was shot through the arm. And
so he's okay.
He's okay. All he's right. fine.
Good.
But we're totally out of state with our crew. We're there ready to shoot. He's got to arrive the next morning for a scene, and I get a phone call that says he's been shot. He's in the hospital. I mean, and, you know, he was incredibly heroic, stopped a burglar from breaking into this neighbor's home, and massive, you know, struggle happened sure. and got
and,
shot.
And right away, you're thinking production value. Let's film at the hospital.
He was ready to come. He was like, oh, I've talked to my doctor. It's a through and through. I'm going to be there the next day. And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen. So basically when the doctor talked to him, doctor's like, it's not going to happen. You're staying here. So we had to rewrite a large portion of our script and figure out how to make it. But our team came together and we effectively, you know, made this story work. So it's awesome, man. That's what filmmaking is. You know, you just keep plowing forward and try to figure it out.
So when can we expect the release of Black 2?
We don't have an official launch date. I mean, we're still working on episodes now, trying to get the VFX done. It's a massive uphill battle. Then we have score, color correction, sound design, just a bucket full of stuff. But I think if people can stick with us, they're really going to like it. It's definitely going to be no later than summer. I can tell you that. But I think if you know our fans, if they are listening, you're not going to be disappointed. You're really going to like it. If you like what was in season one, it's multiplied exponentially in season two.
Well, I love that shot at the end of the trailer for season two, that slow motion shot of the rifle. It gets all tense. And then did you film that yourself? It's beautifully shot.
I mean, our DP is Max Heiligman. Phenomenal kid. I call him the kid genius. And he's here in Chicago. Great DP. Does a lot of stuff. But he filmed that in incredibly high frame rate. We had a guy named Gary who helped us in Arizona and provided us with a real 50 caliber Barrett 82A1 sniper rifle, and we fired 50 caliber rounds.
Is that the one they call God's gun?
I don't know about that. I mean, it was an incredible, incredible machine. And the crazy thing is, barely any recoil.
Really?
I fired it myself personally just because it's a one of a kind experience. $7 per bullet. But when we got it on film, it just looks miraculous. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that was a really cool shot, for sure. Well, Frank, if people want to find out more about you, where's the best place they can check you out online?
Sure. So we have a YouTube channel, and if you just search Black the Web Series, or if you search Black the Web Series on Google, we'll come up. But our main website is blacktheweb.com, and that's where you can find us. We also have a Facebook page, just broke 10,500 fans, so we're chugging along. On our YouTube page, nice. Luckily, we just broke 5,000 subscribers, but we got 170,000 views total. And I know in the social media world, that's not much, but I don't know 10,000 people. So that's where they can find us. BlackTheWebSeries.com has all the links, and they can find information about us at any time.
And can you buy merchandise? Because you guys sell some pretty cool stuff.
Sure.
I still sport the patch you gave me for Black. I wear it everywhere I go. So can people buy some of the stuff? Because it's actually pretty fun.
Well, I'll say that a lot of our fans, if anybody's listening, they are expecting their gear. They're like, where's our Kickstarter? Of rewards, and we appreciate their patience. One of the things we had to do is get the production done first. We are now putting together the t-shirts, patches, paracord bracelets, bags, posters, all these things, and we're trying to basically categorize and ship out over 360 packages. So they are coming to those fans. We wanted to give them all this merchandise first because they basically contributed to our Kickstarter.
Sure. Yeah.
When it comes to actual merchandising, we are partnering up with a group out there, and I don't want to give away any details yet, but they're going to create a little merchandising box, maybe called the Black Box is what we're working on.
Yeah,
but it'll have
what you gotta call it.
T-shirt, a target, a patch, different types of patches, possibly hats in the future, and that'll be something they can order on a website in the future.
And maybe one of those guns that you fired as well.
No, that's
not. Yeah, 50 cal, throw that in.
There's some ATF regulations that would not make that a possibility.
It's okay. I think you can ship those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But our t-shirt's going to be phenomenal. It has a target constructed by the same designer. I worked in conjunction with a guy named Steve from WebTech Gear, and he's based in Canada, and he's just a phenomenal graphics and logo designer. He created this target with my help. We worked together, and then we put it on the back of the shirt. Well, the shirt we're going to sell that comes out in the Kickstarter actually has holes as if a character has been shooting it, and then it has notation. So it's the lead character of the project's been working on this target, doing his training and shooting, and then his superior in the storyline has put handwritten notes by each of the target areas, sweet, giving him real military feedback, like what you should do. Like one of the things he says, way to hammer nails, and that's what, you know, military operators call it when you get a tight grouping of shells perfectly close together. So, yeah, we're just excited about that. So that'll be something. And then the target itself would actually be for sale in the future.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Really good idea. And really, Jawheads, I've seen season one. I loved it. I'm anticipating season two. Hopefully you have some type of premiere again. We were so upset that we missed the first one, so I know me and Matt would love to come to the second one.
I will specifically try to coordinate it around your schedules, and you should do like a live Jaw while you're there.
Hey, that would be a blast.
This would be an honor for us, Frank.
Yeah,
this would be.
Absolutely. We're going to do something in Chicago and something in L.A. just because of the logistics of where most of our cast and crew is. But when we're here in town, we're going to do it. We're also probably going to screen that same night the Convergence series, which is what Curtis and Corey Gilbert actually haven't been producing, which is a best way to phrase it is like Siriana meets X-Files. It is a beautiful, I've seen their first pilot episode. It is a beautiful project. It's gorgeously shot. I don't know if gorgeously is a real word, but that's going to screen on the same night. So you have a chance to see both.
Awesome.
Nice. So Frank TZD is going to be sitting in on this entire Jaw. And hey, since we're doing the Bizarro episode, we should do a Bizarre Cinema War, right?
I think we should, Matt. I think that sounds like a really good idea. Something that would be bizarre, foreign to me and you. Something like, I don't know, I'm just whipping this off the top of my head.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
The Oscars are coming out this week, right?
Yeah, all
right.
Yeah.
So how about we do this? Will a superhero movie ever win Best Picture at the Oscars?
Okay. And you have to argue yes.
Yeah, and for sure, I think yes.
And I'll argue...
I'm sitting over on this couch. For some reason, now all of a sudden, I love Men in Blue Tights.
There you go. Okay, great. And wow. and I love hating that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Because, yeah.
Had to say it that way, huh?
Yeah, I did.
You couldn't say you're into indie film or you're...
No,
you know.
Because I poo-poo that. My nose is in the air.
Oh, I poo-poo. I got to use poo-poo a couple of times this episode.
I'm drinking wine. Hmm. So, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Cinema War.
Hold on. Ready?
Yeah.
Cinema War.
Cinema War.
All right. Going down, Matt K.
You're going down, man. All right. So that brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye. And this week, Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
Introducing the Content Champion Podcast with Laz James. In each show, Laz interviews the web's most successful content marketing experts so you can learn proven strategies to grow your online brand. Vibrant, informative, and always essential listening. The show highlights step-by-step techniques you can start using right now to become a content champion in your own business. Listen today at contentchampion.com or find them on iTunes at Content Champion. And we thank them for their sponsorship of Cinema Jaw.
Eye for an Eye this week, focus. In the midst of veteran con man Nikki's latest scheme, a woman from his past, now an accomplished femme fatale, shows up and throws his plan for a loop. The film stars Will Smith and Margot Robbie from Wolf of Wall Street, Glenn Ficera and John... Oh, man, dude, I'm getting Rye the
it's
movie
Glenn
guy.
And John. Glenn and John. Everybody knows those guys.
Yeah, the movie is directed by Glenn and John. The duo last directed 2011's Crazy Stupid Love. Rye, interested or ignore, in focus.
This is really bizarre.
It's hard, right? It's not as easy. Like, you whip it out, and he's like, I want to get there.
Well, you know, I really like the pedigree of people that you mentioned.
Oh, come
here.
On. You just use it. The pedigree.
And I don't want to...
You wouldn't say that word.
I just say that word all the time.
And I don't want to poo-poo.
But not when we're talking about
Will Smith.
I don't
want to poo-poo on Will Smith. Yeah. No, I do like the directors. I love Crazy Stupid Love. I've seen this trailer a couple of times, and I think we're going to the screening on Monday.
You know what? Crazy Stupid Love was stupid.
You know who's in here? And the only reason I'm going to say I'm interested is for the girl from Wolf of Wall Street. I'd like to see her a little bit more. So I'm interested.
Really? Just re... Okay.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Well,
if you want to see more of her, just rewatch Wolf of Wall Street. I mean,
I don't think it's going to get any more watchable than that.
Yeah. Seriously. Frank, what about you? What did you think? Interested or ignore?
I'm going interested. It looks like a well-written script. It's a, it seemed maybe just a tad too polished, but it looks fun and it looks fast. So I'm up for it.
That's what those good con movies do, right? Yeah. I mean, it's going to be fun, fast, you know, sexy girl. Unfortunately, it's Will Smith, but I can handle him every once in a while.
I buy him in that more than I do After Earth or any of the other things that he's tried to go down that road. So he's coming out in a Marvel project or something, right, where he plays Deadshot?
What?
Yeah, he's in Suicide Squad. Not Deadshot. Who's he play?
Deadpool?
No.
That's Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I thought I read. Let's throw that in the job box if we can.
Will Smith
coming out.
Yeah,
I think he plays. I think he plays Deadshot, and it's in a superhero project.
You mean Deathstroke?
Maybe it is Deathstroke for Suicide Squad.
Maybe I'm supposed to chime in on the Bizarro episode. Let's try it again. Keep this all rolling here. You mean Deathstroke?
That's right.
Yes,
thank you
there we
so
go.
Much, Rye. Over here, don't you hate these things?
He's the comic. Yeah.
You're the poo-poo guy.
Yeah, comic books.
You're like, it's a death movie if he's in it.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch a Woody Allen movie.
Oh, wonderful.
Man.
Eat some cheese.
Man, have some wine.
Exactly. Okay, so I think I'm going to say I'm ignoring this one.
Ooh.
Wow.
While I do like a good con movie, I'm over Will Smith completely. He's failed me too many times. Margot Robbie, she's hot, but really, what else is she bringing to the table, guys? Seriously.
I thought she did a decent job in Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, she was hot, but also, I wouldn't say she was a bad actress. I thought she did a fine job.
No, she is stunning, but she looks like she's got some skills.
Yeah.
Okay, that's yet to be determined. Anyway, this one's an ignore for me.
He's so bitter.
He is.
Man. You know,
I'm a mean man.
Must be the chair over there.
It is. Okay, so that is two interested and one ignore for Focus. Speaking of new films, I caught Force Majeure. Force Majeure presents a week in the life of a Swedish family staying at a luxury resort in the French Alps. A businessman named Tomas, his wife Ebba, their young daughter Vera, and preschooler Harry. On their second day of skiing, a controlled avalanche goes awry and threatens them as they're having lunch. Whereupon, Thomas panics and runs, leaving Ebba alone to face the threat with their children. He quickly returns and no one is hurt, but Tomas's momentary cowardice, together with a refusal to admit what he did, creates a rift in his marriage that he struggles to repair. Ebba is deeply disappointed in her husband and finds it difficult to forgive him. Matt, an old friend, joins them at the resort with his young girlfriend Fanny, and they try to help Tomas and Ebba reconcile. But the conflict infects their relationship as well. When Tomas finally experiences an emotional breakdown and confesses his failings, his wife and children confront him. What I liked most about this film, Rye, was its un-Americanness. And I mean that as a compliment. Where an American film would probably give us a clear character to root for, Force Majeure steps back and lets the viewer reach their own conclusions about a complicated bit of family's life together. There are also some laugh-out-loud funny moments here. One scene in particular is where they're sitting around a ski resort bar in which the male lead is offered a compliment, only to have it rudely retracted by a would-be admirer. It's just hilarious. Johannes Kuni and Lisa Lovin Kongsley are highly serviceable as the couple in question, though I think the standout performance of the film belongs to Christopher Hivju, who plays the couple's friends Mats, who not only gets some of the funniest moments, but seems the most real as well. I thought the film went on one scene too long, and the final scene in particular seemed a little out of place for me. However, if you are married with children, I think this could be a highly relatable and even cathartic movie to watch. I say check out Force Majeure, 3 Jaws.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
And thanks for recommending this film, Matt.
Sure. Because I always recommend the foreign film, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would have caught this one if it wasn't for your recommendation.
Yeah, you probably would have been rewatching The Avengers.
And you had mentioned about this avalanche. I don't know, Frank, did you see this film by chance?
I have not. I saw the trailer, though.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
So they have this controlled avalanche that Matt is talking about, and the family is watching it, and then they realize that it's not as controlled as they thought.
Yeah.
What I loved about that is the film captures this idea of, like, it was a shocking moment. And we've all had these, like, startling moments in our lives where all hell sort of breaks loose. And it isn't until, like, after it, maybe an hour or maybe a day after, that you can almost laugh at it. And that's the first thing that happens when the couple is recapping what happened to another couple they're at dinner with. And basically the wife is explaining how the husband ran away during the avalanche and left her and her husband kids
right,
just sort of helpless over there. There's this moment where they start to laugh, because at first it's funny. You can't believe how shocking of a moment it was. And so they start laughing over it, right?
Yeah, and you know what? It's easy to miss. We had the benefit of watching this on demand so we could rewind. In fact, I did rewind the avalanche scene. It's really easy to miss the fact that
this guy
runs away.
And if you watch it a second time, it's actually funny, is it not? I mean, he runs away. It's almost hilarious.
Yeah, he grabs his phone.
He grabs his phone, and he literally runs towards the camera, like just getting the heck out of there from the shot. And it's a beautiful shot of the avalanche. Probably the best I've seen all of 2014.
Yeah, I want to say that this movie is filmed impeccably. It's very beautiful. Obviously, it's in the Alps, which is a beautiful setting. There's one choice that they made in particular that I hated, where they kind of took you out of the moment. They switched to a GoPro on one of the characters' helmets for some dumb reason. That felt out of place. But getting back to the avalanche scene, absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And yes, very funny.
And what I thought, too, what you see happen here, deterioration of this couple and family almost mimics the reaction they have to the avalanche. So at first, when they're seeing the avalanche happen, they're all like gathering around, actually like filming it, like, oh, look at this. And then they start laughing at it because it's getting closer and closer. And
like, ooh, this is exciting.
Then all of a sudden it gets a little bit more serious, and then it's a disaster. And that's technically what happens with the relationship afterwards. At first, it's funny. They can have a moment where they can laugh about this weird moment,
but
right?
It doesn't go away.
But it doesn't go away. It just gets
bigger.
A little bit more serious, a little bit more serious.
Well done, Rye. Good observation.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Damn it, I forgot I'm sitting on
it's
your
uncommon
couch.
For him.
Yeah. Who the fuck it?
I know.
And then eventually it just a disaster, you know? And so yeah. I saw that as a really good parallel.
Well done. Do you agree with me, though, that the final scene of the movie, and we don't want to spoil anything here, so it's a little frustrating for people who haven't seen it.
Okay, well, there's two, and I don't mind spoiling the second to last scene. There's a scene where...
I liked the second. Go ahead.
The second to last scene shows the family going down the slopes in a very like foggy scene where you cannot see more than 20 feet in front of you, and the husband says he'll go first to make sure it's safe. Followed by the kids, and then
did
the mother
last.
Did
you not think for a moment that something terrible was going to happen in that scene?
I thought possibly, but then what did transpire, I think, was staged by the parents for the children's sake.
Oh, really? That's interesting that you took that away.
Oh, I'm almost positive.
No.
Yeah.
No.
100%.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
What? You legitimately think that randomly, after what we've seen happen, and that he's sort of lost his masculinity, that all of a sudden he's going to save the wife randomly and carrying him to the kids.
She
was almost laughing. She was giggling during the scene. She's giggling.
Listen, I admit that is convenient, but it is a movie after all, so convenient things for the plot do happen. And no, I don't think the characters were intentionally staging that for the benefit of their children. The wife would never have done that. I think she was still too damaged, and that was her cathartic moment that healed their relationship.
Really?
Yes.
Now, the moment right before that, there's a wonderful moment where the family all hugs, sort of lays on top of the father.
I wouldn't call that a wonderful moment.
No?
No.
Oh, I thought it was beautiful. It was very emotional.
Well, the children...
I thought the movie could have almost ended right there.
There was a couple of points where I thought the movie could end, but you're avoiding my question as far as the final scene of the movie.
Now to the final scene.
Yes.
And I don't mind talking about it a little bit in depth without ruining
it. Just
a
seemed
ton.
Very out of place. After the scene on the mountain, which, you know, we're arguing about what the meaning of it was, but... It served as the final moment. They somehow solved the issue that had been continuing throughout the whole film.
But at the end, it's the wife who has maybe a moment of doubt and sort of runs away from the family
but then,
a little bit,
then the,
right?
The, I guess.
And then that last
does
final...
Does she run away from the film?
She's the first one off the
bus.
Okay.
Okay. That's
and then
true.
The very final scene is, which I just loved. It almost came out of the way it was shot. It was like a Wes Anderson, how he loves to do the characters walking
beautiful.
In slow motion. And the Alps are in there, and they're walking down, and the guy offers the husband a cigarette, and he says no. And then he thinks about it for a second, and he's like...
You know what? I will have
I
one.
I will have one. Yeah. And his son says, Dad, you smoke? He's like, yes. I do. And it's just perfect. I love that scene. I thought the ending, I thought that's what it was sort of touching.
Okay,
at.
You know
it
what?
It was ironic to the husband that it all came full circle.
I had thought it was out of place, but now that you point out the fact that the wife was the first one off the bus, it kind of makes sense. Yeah.
And lastly, well you, done. In your review, that very eloquent review.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
You mentioned this hilarious scene where they were sitting by the pool
God.
At the bar.
Yes. Laughed my ass off.
Same here. What I love about these kind of movies is I love a good comedy, and I don't laugh as hard as I do at a movie like this for that 5-minute scene was hysterical. It was so well written.
Absolutely.
And so well acted. And I can't believe that hadn't come up in a movie already where there's someone giving a compliment and then taking the compliment away. It was It was perfect. The music that was playing made the whole scene.
Yeah. So. There were some really good visuals in this movie, and just an amazing movie. I liked it a lot. What do you give it?
I'm giving it 3.5 Jaws.
Oh, nice.
3.5 Jaws for me, and you gave it?
I gave it 3.
All right. I like it. I like it. It's playing on video on demand, so check it out, Jawheads. Thanks again for recommending it, Matt.
See, you're running the show, Rye.
I'm not anymore. I'm sitting over here. I'm drinking my wine. It's a wonderful Pinot.
Yeah, so Force Majeure was not a bizarre movie per se, but that does bring us to our next topic, which is our top 5 bizarre movies. Ryan, you're getting us started this week. What you got at number 5?
Well, let me just tell you, Matt, this was a tough list for me to come up with.
Really?
No,
you're
not
really.
You're
a pretty bizarre dude.
I am a pretty bizarre dude. This was actually a fun list to come up with because bizarre movies are right up my alley. I love when there's a movie that's strange, it's bizarre, but I love it. I think it's one of my favorite things when you come across a great one like this.
Yeah, for sure.
So at number 5, I have a film that came out in 2003, directed by Lars von Trier. So you already know it's going to be weird right off the bat, right? and he should be mentioned, I mean, on this list somewhere. This one stars Nicole Kidman. It is entitled Dogville. And Nicole Kidman here, Matt, plays Grace, a woman who comes to Dogville, this town in the United States, on the run from the mob. They, and all these townspeople, agree to hide her as long as she does chores for the people in the town.
What?
Yeah. Now, what makes this strange, it isn't even all that strange. Here's what makes it strange. The movie is shot on an open stage with little to no props or scenery. There's basically white lines painted as walls, and that's her bedroom. And she can just walk outside of there and go into the courtyard. And that's all it is you're just imagining.
I've never even
the
heard
stage.
Of this
That
movie.
Sounds bizarre.
All right. Speaking of bizarre, and basically, I mean, the plot line eventually is they're hiding Nicole Kidman from this mob, and they're just walking around the stage with these white lines painted all over the floor, and it's minimalist as you can imagine, and eventually the mob does come back, and who committed the crimes? Did the mob or did the townspeople trying to hide her? It's interesting. I went back and I read Roger Ebert's review. He took it as very anti-American. I didn't when I watched the film at all. I took it more of that sort of like evil can be anywhere was von Trier's take. I don't know, but well worth a spin. It's way out there. And I mean, whenever do you see a film on nothing but a stage with painted lines on the ground? Dogville, my number 5.
Wow. All right, Frank, that swings us over to you. What you got at number 5?
So when you put out the list email about bizarre, I had to Google it. Find the definition. So very strange or unusual, especially so as to cause interest or amusement. So after listening to you guys for a long time, I realized that I got to have my own take on what I believe to be my top 5, not what the generic top 5s are. Because there are films that I've found that are always going to be in the top 5s, like of anything, and they're like universally accepted. These are probably not universally accepted. So my number 5 is a film I just recently saw, and I watched it on my phone. It's called Predestination. Came out in 2014.
Never heard of it. I love it.
So had no idea. They actually were pretty smart. They put the first 10 minutes for free online. So you could watch it as a small taste.
That's awesome.
First 10 minutes have nothing to do with what the rest of the movie really is about. But it's exciting and engaging. These are the same guys, and I'm always going back to directors because I'm a director. So the Spierig brothers, they directed, the last big film was Daybreakers, which is a vampire
movie. Oh, yeah. I like that one.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's Ethan Hawke. Okay. Well, Ethan Hawke's the star of this one as well. The stand-up performance is by this character, this woman named Sarah Snook. So I don't know how much of this I want to give away. But so I'm going to do it, and if you want to bleep me, you can spoil me out. He plays a time-traveling cop who has to go back and stop a bomber in the 70s, and he's way in the future, but then he meets this guy.
Now you're thinking of Time Cop.
The guy is clearly a woman who is playing a guy. Then you find out that she was supposed to be an astronaut who had both sets of sex organs and had a child, and then because of the birth, they basically had to get rid of the male organs. The female organs. So they're like, you now have to become a man.
Jeez.
So had to remove the breast, then becomes a man. And then trying to live her life as a man. But the baby was taken away. And you find out that she had a one-night stand with this person who she never met and was falling madly in love. I don't even know how to explain it from there. Ethan Hawke is actually the person who goes back in time and has sex with himself when his self becomes a woman, and then that woman has the child, but the child is actually Ethan Hawke.
One word, bizarre.
It is a mind screw. It's awesome. It is, you watch it and at the end, and then the bomber turns out to be him as well. It's crazy, but it is great.
I don't think you spoiled anything.
Because I hope not.
I'm way more intrigued.
I tried to explain it to my wife, and she wanted to punch me in the face.
And one more time with the name of the movie?
It's called Predestination. Predestination. Out on iTunes right now. It's how I watched it. I dug it. And if any of that was too much of a spoiler, I apologize.
Hey.
You'll probably get all that, still watch the movie, and I had to go back and watch the last 20, 30 minutes of it again on my phone because I just didn't understand what just happened.
Wow.
It was cool.
Piqued my interest.
I just want to focus in on what you said there. How'd you watch this film?
On my phone.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So that
That's wonderful. I'm so glad that you're able to watch it on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. The smaller the screen, the better, I say.
Yeah.
No, look, I'm an IMAX junkie. I see all the IMAX I can, but if I'm on the road, I'm mobile, I watch it mobily.
That's right. That's right. It's a device of convenience. So that brings us to my number five. And geez, after you guys number fives, mine seems a little paltry by comparison. But 1985 teen film, romance comedy, John Cusack, Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
Slightly bizarre, I guess.
Great film.
$2. The thing that makes this movie bizarre is some of the... it's just kind of an off-the-wall comedy. You think it's going to be a straightforward teen romance drama kind of thing going on, but then the mom is cooking like something in a pot with the tentacles that are actually moving.
Right.
And there's some really like literal sight gags that are just off the wall. Like the brother is getting like mail order brides and like how to pick up chicks. And
Is that with the French foreign exchange student? Is that the film? And then they're like the food, and they're like, we made French fries French bread.
Yes.
Yes. French dressing. It's great.
I love Better Off Dead, and I think it's a pretty weird movie when you break it down. I mean, it's definitely, it's just my number five. We're going to go up from there.
He races the dudes in the car, the two Japanese guys who talk like Howard Cosell.
Yes.
And then, isn't that where he falls into a trash truck, and he's going by? And I don't know if this is a different John Cusack movie.
No, it is, because he fails at the
first
race.
And there's an African-American actor, and he's like, look at that, people throwing away a perfectly good white boy.
Yep.
And it's just, it's a great comedy. That's a great choice.
And I forgot how... some of the bizarre humor that is involved in the movie. So
it's pretty strange.
It's
weird.
Decent. I like that pick.
And the my $2 thing, worth of
$2.
That alone.
Classic.
All right. So, Ryan, what you got at number four? We're into our
all
number
right.
fours.
Number four, we had a foreign film review earlier, so I stick with that. It's a French film. Came out in 2012. It's entitled Holy Motors. And it follows a man named Oscar, who performs in various scenes. He's basically an actor who's going to put on different clothes, different costumes, and perform in these weird scenes. But there's apparently no cameras following him in the movie. This is the idea. And each scene is so bizarre. It's exciting to watch because he's wearing like different costumes. He plays like an old man in one scene. He's like a dancing person in another scene. And none of these particular scenes connect in any way. So there's no like linear story at all.
Wow.
But it's visually striking. Like it's one of these like you can't take your eyes off that kind of movie. You know what I mean? Like each scene is like, what is this guy doing? Where's this going? Even though they're not connecting at all. And eventually it starts to set in that it's really about like performance and the way people perform, not only just as actors and in art forms that way people perform, but when you're set up in different situations, how we all are different. When you're at work, you're a different type of person than when you're at home, than when you're having wine out with, you know, your buddies and, you know, as we are at Pippin's Wine Bar, that kind of thing. So I'm different here than I'm different, you know, when I'm with my family. Who knows?
How bizarre.
He's different.
Bizarre. But Holy Motors, I'm telling you, it was up for like best film over at the Cannes Film Festival. It's way up there, but... weird, very strange, but they're taking away for the little vignettes of all the performances that go on throughout the movie. Holy Motors, my number four.
Nice. Frank, what you got at number four?
Ryan, your honor, I made sure that I put a foreign film in here.
Beautiful.
So
beautiful.
This is the 1988 classic, truly classic, by Katsuhiro Otomo. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but it is the movie...
On CinemaJaw, that sounds good.
It's the movie Akira.
I am so happy with this pick, man.
I mean, it's visually stunning in so many ways. I've always wanted the bike as a kid. That you know, Akira's bike is just killer.
and then Tetsuo and all the stuff. But the, when the dream sequence happens, and then the stuffed animals are like trying to maul people, and then
the milk pours out their eyes,
right? And then the then the body parts start to explode, and they're reaching all over the place. It is a truly bizarre film, but it is iconic for anybody who's a comic fan or
yes.
A fan. And some of the best cosplay in the world has been Akira cosplay.
Sure.
It's good looking.
Before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about the beginnings of CinemaJaw, and our first guest was Charles Klein, and our topic was best animations.
Mm.
And I think my number one, if I'm not mistaken, we'd have to go back and listen, this was 5 years ago, was Akira. So I like that pick.
That and Ghost in the Shell would be close together, but Akira is just an epic.
You know what's so great, too, is I just bought this on Blu-ray. I've only seen it one time. I think Charles Klein's copy, possibly.
Yeah.
And so I had it, and I just recently bought it on Blu-ray. I'm so excited because I've never seen it on Blu-ray to crank up the volume and the visuals. The animation is fantastic. So.
Tetsuo!
Yeah, awesome.
Awesome.
Is it Kaneda? Am I saying Tetsuo? Is Tetsuo a character?
Tetsuo Oshima, man. He's the one that becomes the superhero type villain with the red cape and...
Good times.
Oh, so iconic. I have the Tetsuo action figure proudly displayed in my home. That brings us to my number four. And if you want to talk about a bizarre movie, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai in the Eighth Dimension. Am I stealing your number one?
That's my number one,
Are
brother.
You serious?
Wow.
That's my number one.
Oh, wow.
What are you doing? That's crazy.
That's bizarre.
I've got even more bizarre films ahead of it.
Okay.
You know what? Wait a second. This is your number one?
You do what you need to.
No. We're going to wait. This is Frank Zidi.
Oh, well, all right.
We'll talk about it when we get to your number one.
You're a gentleman and a scholar, right? I mean, Matt. Bizarro. Watch out.
All right. That's just a tease. So we swing it around to Rise number four. Are we at number three?
Or three.
You know what's so terrible is you ruined my joke, because I was going to say, wait, number three? What number are we on?
Well, just go ahead and do it.
Number three?
Yeah.
All right. My number three, Matt, comes from director David Lynch. I think we can all have a David Lynch film on
Absolutely,
our list.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there's some that I truly love. I think I love Mulholland Drive. I one of my favorite films of all time, if not my favorite. But this one I rented. I was by myself when I saw it, and it freaked me the hell out, and I don't even know what it was about. Came out in 2006. It's entitled Inland Empire. Laura Dern, one of Lynch's favorites, plays an actress, and this was actually Lynch's first movie that came out after Mulholland Drive. She plays an actress waiting to get a part in a movie. She eventually gets the role, and they seem to be rehearsing it when she runs into this like fake house that's clearly a prop. But when she goes in there, she disappears. Her coworkers look into the house. They can't find her. And she finds herself inside, like a real house inside there, and all this weird stuff starts happening. There's only one section of it,
right? David Lynch.
Nobody even knows what's going on.
No.
And at one point, they're watching TV of a sitcom, but the sitcom is just a bunch of grown bunnies, like people in bunny costumes, talking gibberish to themselves with a laugh track, like it's a sitcom, but it's bunnies. No one even knows what's going on.
Do you think even David Lynch knows what's going on?
I doubt it. I doubt it at this point. And then even stranger, eventually she gets out of the house, Laura Dern, and she sees like a doppelganger of herself walking on Hollywood Boulevard who's trying to kill her. And then she looks down and has like a knife in her side. It's bizarre stuff.
Good times.
It ends. I was like, I don't even know what it was about. But boy, was that awesome. I mean, I was freaked out
really?
By it.
You liked
yeah,
it.
I was freaked out by it. It's just an offsetting kind of movie, which can be good in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's rather long. It's a little windy. He probably could have cut it off. And I think this was the first time he'd ever used digital camera, and he was experimenting a lot. So it's weird David Lynch for sure. So.
And one more time with the title?
Inland Empire.
Nice. All right, Frank, that swings us around to your number three.
Number three is kind of three films, and I had to choose which one from this director that I wanted, and I've just made a last-minute switch because I'm coming back to true bizarreness.
Oh, boy.
So it's Darren Aronofsky, and I was kind of like, oh, is it Black Swan? Is it Requiem for a Dream? But I realized Requiem for a Dream for me is just more mind-blowing, and it gives you, it gave me nightmares for days. The one film that stuck with me that he did that is truly bizarre for me is The Fountain.
I love this pick.
It transcend space and time three different times. You're constantly, I mean, one of Hugh Jackman's best performances, nobody ever gives it enough credit at all, and how he's using the tree and then but the stuff with the conquistador and there and the Fountain of Youth and all these things, and how it's just it is bizarre. It's incredible, but completely bizarre. And it's just a great film.
I agree. And I've only seen it one time. Have you only seen it one time?
Oh, I think I've seen it a couple times.
Yeah. I always want to revisit it because I think like maybe I'll understand it a little bit more the next time.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time it ended, I'm like, oh, is she the tree at the end?
I think because he's talking to her, and I think that's, you know, if you go back to the beginning of the film, there's that same tree where it comes out of, and it's got the milk of life, and but it's wild,
right?
Like when he goes in, he tries to talk to someone, and he sees the Inquisition happening and people being hung, and it's just crazy.
It is.
I think this film came up last when we did our ambitious film projects, if I'm not mistaken. It's definitely the scope of the movie is pretty.
Yeah,
ambitious, and it's Hugh Jackman, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, but how he's got a space bubble that
right.
like took a piece of the Earth out, and then he eats that, and that's sustenance, and he's flying through space in this bubble to go into the center of the cosmos. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But you're with it. It's good.
Yeah, Aronofsky, man.
Yep.
I like it.
Nice pick.
Yeah, that brings us over to my number three, and at number three, I have a collaboration between Frank Oz and Jim Henson, The Dark Crystal.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Nice pick, dude.
Dude.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't get the reference.
That's how you like to say it.
Oh, okay. Well done, Ryan.
Hey,
well,
nice pick, dude.
Thank you. Thank you. You know what? Everybody was expecting Frank Oz and Jim Henson to make something with the Muppets. And then they presented The Dark Crystal, and I think it caught us all off guard. I remember my parents let me watch this movie when I was extremely young, and it's a disturbing movie. So here we have essentially... Not essentially. You have exactly Muppets being tortured on the screen.
Yeah.
That's what we're watching. And I think I was like 5 or 6, and my parents had no idea. They were like, oh, this is Jim Henson. Go ahead and watch this. It disturbed the crap out of me as a young boy. And I recently rewatched this one, another one of Charles Klein's favorite movies. I recently rewatched it at his behest. And I was like, wow, this still holds up. It's starting to fray a little bit at the edges because it's like, what, 35 years old now?
Well, what I think works so wonderful in that film is the design of the puppets, right? They're just freaky looking.
Yeah.
I mean, who came up with these designs?
Those sort of scarab things that would like make, you know, clicking noises as they walked.
Yeah.
And then who's the character? Gelfling, the kind of crazy character.
But the Gelflings were cute.
Yeah.
Essentially like Sesame Street or Muppet Show looking Muppets.
Right.
I mean, they would not have looked out of place on either one of those shows. And to see them go through, you know, a real dramatic story arc where they're actually like the pain is inflicted upon them. It was very strange.
Creepy.
Yeah. Creepy, but still an amazing movie. Definitely high up on my bizarre list.
Nice.
So, Ryan,
nice
what pick. You got? That brings us to our number twos. What you got at number two?
Whoa. What number are we in?
We're on two.
Oh, two. Okay.
Number
all
two.
Right.
As
right.
you like to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a great one here.
This is the
right.
kind of movies you like to watch. They're all number
well
two.
Well played.
Here's my number two, Matt. And I love... Shane Carruth gave us Primer. We both agree this is a wonderful time travel movie.
Yeah.
In 2013, he gave us a very bizarre movie entitled Upstream Color. And let me just read this from the Wikipedia page. I thought this summed it up well when I was looking it back to refresh my notes. From Wikipedia page, Upstream of Color is about two people whose lives and behaviors are affected by a complex parasite without knowing it that has a three-cycle life in which it passes from humans to pigs to orchids.
Sounds just like you, Rye.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it? Bizarre as hell, right?
Yeah.
And the first stage of the sort of parasite, if you will, and the first section of the film is by far the most interesting and compelling to me, and that is where the thief, they call this character, inserts this parasite into this girl.
Okay.
And it's just a weird bug that gets into her body and basically almost hypnotizes her. At that point, he can steal everything from her, get her to write checks, yada yada, and it's very bizarre. Then later you go into this guy who's getting like pig sounds and he's like the middleman between this whole thing. But then later, the second part that I love is this girl who was possessed by this parasite meets this guy on the train. They start talking and they realize that they had the same exact experience, that he was also at some point affected by this parasite. And they start to try to solve this whole thing together, and they realize that there's almost like an attraction to pigs with them now. You got to see the movie. I mean, it's a crazy movie, and it's one of those, it's intriguing where sometimes you don't understand what's going on, and that's an okay thing because each scene is so well played that you're like, oh my God, I got to know what's going on next. So Upstream Color. I love it.
Nice. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Primer. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Upstream Color is streaming as well right now.
I believe so. Yeah. Throw it in the jaw box. Is Upstream Color streaming? I believe it still is.
Yeah. Either way, worth checking out. So, Frank, what you got at number two?
I have a number two film that this same director directed another really wild, weird, out there film. But the director is Richard Kelly, and the film is the 2001 Donnie Darko.
Glad this came up.
Yeah, it is. I remember watching
one of my honorables, yeah.
And then the other one he did was Southland Tales. Did you ever see that?
I have not seen Southland Tales.
With The Rock, Justin Timberlake, Sean William Scott. It is a crazy, weird film. Not as good at all. And it was his follow-up to Donnie Darko, so you know that was never going to be as good as Donnie Darko.
No.
But like Cellar Door, the knife and all these things. And I remember like the jet
Frank
engine.
The bunny.
The jet engine falling in the house. Like, what's going on? And how water is the conduit. I remember watching it, and then I immediately tried to watch the end of it again. And then I started to Google online, and there are massive amounts of conspiracy theorists out there who try to explain what the theme of Donnie Darko is and how it works, and how it is this time portal that's created, and it's not reality, and he's trying to get out of it, and it is a completely... I remember when the bunny showed up, I was like, what the hell is going on?
I agree. Now, I've seen the film numerous times, but to go back that very first time that I saw it, my take on it, I hadn't read anything about it, I didn't know what was going on, and I watched the movie... I had that same take, like, what? A jet engine just falls from the sky? This is so out there, you know? What is going on?
Yeah. It is. Anytime there's like a time loop type thing, it's a bit of a mind screw.
Yep.
And this is no exception. Probably really one of the best time loop movies of all time.
It's a good one.
It's a very small genre, still.
Glad it came up.
Yeah, me too, for sure. All right, so that brings us to the, my number two, which is, speaking of Darren Aronofsky... Pi. What a weird freaking movie Pi is. It's old enough, I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything. At one point, a character takes a drill to his temple and pretty much lobotomizes himself, although he does not die.
Just a little disclaimer, I haven't seen the movie, so thanks for the spoiler. Oh. But
that's not the worst part.
It's okay. Yeah. It's not high on my list. But
so the premise of this movie is we have a young mathematician who is trying to find this number which will reveal the name of God. And people are after him from all sides, different religious groups.
Well, he also thinks he can solve the stock market.
Right, yeah. So it's just a weird-ass movie. Yeah, so this equation apparently will give him, like, the insight to know what stocks are going to do the next day, and also just happens to be the actual name of God.
Wow.
In the Torah, the Hebrew, the old-school interpretation, there's these Jewish numerologists who interpret the Torah with mathematics. They're chasing him. The mob is chasing him. The school is chasing him because he's supposed to do some sort of like research project and they've given him money.
Poor Max.
He builds a supercomputer in his home and basically goes completely insane. And it's Darren Aronofsky in black and white. I believe his first major...
It was his first, yeah.
Yeah, so it's his directorial debut. It's stunning. I love Pi.
I do too. Nice.
Going to check it out.
Nice pick. I give it 2.14 Jaws.
What?
No, you're way off, dude. Pi's...
3.14. I was off by a number. 3.14. Yeah. See how I played Matt K perfectly?
I didn't know what you
I wouldn't
doing.
Have screwed up that joke if this was not the bizarre episode.
It's all right. It's good.
That would not have been a circle. It would have been in, like, the shape of your head. All right. So that brings us to our number ones, guys. Rye, you're getting us started with the number ones.
Man, this is big. I talked about this movie before on Cinema Jaw. And it's been a long time since I talked about it. It's one of my favorites, though. Came out in 2009. It's actually from Greece, foreign film. Entitled...
Oh, Greece, the movie Greece? Yeah,
no,
John Travolta.
No, please.
We'll stay together.
Greece Light?
What's bizarre about that movie?
Right? Jets and Sharks? No, wrong movie. Sorry.
All right.
Not Greece, no?
No.
Oh, the country.
The country, Greece.
Oh, I see.
Came out in 2009.
The 300, right?
It's entitled Dogtooth. Have you heard, Matt, I know you've heard me talk about Dogtooth
before. We did a video on Dogtooth.
I remember. Hit you over the head.
You did. You beat me savagely.
Now, this tells the story. Tell me this is not totally bizarre. And this is what a premise. It's a husband and wife. They have three children who have, the children themselves have no idea that the outside world exists. Imagine this concept. The parents had these three kids and have never let them leave the house or the compound that they live in. There's no television, there's no radio, and so no everything, internet. There's nothing. So everything that the parents have taught the kids is what they believe.
Their entire world.
So if at one point they're at the dinner table, and if you give something to a person, they're supposed to lick your shoulder. That's what they were taught. So you have to lick them their shoulder. Sometimes a stray cat gets into their backyard.
Oh, and cats, cats are evil, right?
So no, they're the most ferocious animal ever. Like, it's just, oh my God, you got to run away from this cat.
Wow.
It's so strange. And and eventually, it's two things. One, you're seeing like the family concept like really overblown here. And then two, sort of like homeschooling, like what is going on here? It's a very bizarre movie, but wonderful. So bizarre that you can't take your eyes off it. I again went back to Roger Ebert's review, and he even said it's like a car accident where you have to see where this is going to go. Yeah. It's so horrific what's happening to these kids. And they're told that they have this something in their tooth that makes them can't leave the house, hence the name Dogtooth. Don't want to ruin anything for you, but wow, what a crazy, wild, wild movie. One of the most bizarre and awesome movies I've ever seen in my life.
Nice pick, man. So, nice pick.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right, Frank, what you got at number one?
Well, once again, shocker. We already talked about it, but it is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
I did not see that coming.
No way.
Listen, it is an awesome movie.
It is a seriously awesome movie.
Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Ellen Barkin, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd. It is a massive amount of talent all in a movie that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
The favorite scene is at the end of the trailer. If you remember the original trailer that came out, and he's like, I got the president on line one, and you know, there's something on line two. They want to know if we should destroy the world or do this or that. And he was like, no on one, yes on two. And he was like, was that yes on two, no on one? What do you want to do? And it's like Goldblum dresses like a cowboy, and he's wearing chaps, and then you got the aliens who look like Jamaicans, and the rocket car in the beginning where he travels through the mountain.
It's in the eighth dimension, right?
It's an incredible movie, and he plays guitar in the you know, right, with the horn section, and then Ellen Barkin's crying and she tries to shoot herself. What is going on?
Here's my question though for you, Frank. Is when this movie came out, early 80s?
Yeah, 1982, right? I believe.
If you missed it and you were just watching it now, you were like a 90s kid and you were watching it, do you think they'd still like it or no? Is it something that we just got?
It's a 90s thing. I mean, I'll give you an example. I tried to show Tron to my wife, and I was like so excited for her to see Tron for the first time. I was like, honey, you got to watch this. I watched the big screen. The backyard was great. She's like, this is really nice. This is really okay. She understood none of it, made no sense whatsoever, and I realized that it's incredibly dated, really is, you know, completely complicated, doesn't make any sense to the average person. That's what Buckaroo Banzai is. But you don't but they know they're not taking themselves seriously. They don't care. It's completely crazy. There's a spaceship that's all organic, and they're trying to jiggle this thing that looks like a cow udder, and that's what's going to make the propulsion go. It's just awesome.
It's a really weird movie.
Yeah.
Anytime you get those actors together, Jeff Goldblum and Peter Weller and Doc from Back to the Future, it's strange.
Yeah.
Really out there.
I remember the theme song. It's great. It's just a great one. And then the end credits, remember that?
Yeah.
They're walking in the LA Reservoir. Yeah.
The Reservoir Dogs.
And it's all the characters who died, and they're just walking along and skipping and high-fiving, and it's like, we love the 90s. It's awesome. It's coming. So it's a great film. But bizarre.
Great picks here at number one.
All right.
Matt, I know this is the bizarro episode, but for some reason, I'm still nervous for you.
You know what, Rye? You don't have to be nervous for me, because at number one, I have an amazing, bizarre movie, and I think it's probably one of the most bizarre movies I've ever seen. It is by the auteur himself, Charlie Kaufman. The movie is Being John Malkovich.
That was a contender for me.
Well played, Matthew.
I don't think at the point at which we saw Being John Malkovich, anything that had come before it, even the David Lynch stuff, which I think is bizarre intentionally, was as bizarre unintentionally/intentionally. It's really difficult to categorize this movie because it's just freaking weird. You have John Cusack, who's making his second appearance on my list, who literally gets inside the head of John Malkovich, who plays himself in this movie, through a door on the 13th and a half floor of an office building. And it just gets stranger and stranger and stranger from there. There's puppetry themes and just some weird-ass shit. And one of the best scenes in the movie is when Malkovich goes through the door himself and gets into his own head, and everyone in the scene is John Malkovich. Some great special effects in that, and everybody, the only word they can say is Malkovich, 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 Malkovich.
Yep.
Weird, 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 strange movie. Charlie Kaufman is a master. I think this is the movie that really made us realize that.
I agree. But that was early when, in his career, too. I mean, he went on.
Did I ring the bell on myself?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
Right. Stop ringing the bell all the time. Stop it, Matthew.
All right, I stopped.
But I... but I will say, all right, enough.
All right, I'm done. Right, I'm done. I'm done. Jeez. I'm done.
Give the guy a sound machine one time.
Listeners are going to love that one.
I will say overall, it was what intrigued me so much about Charlie Kaufman and see where it was going to go from there.
Right.
So, yeah, great pick overall. I know it comes up a lot on our list.
You know, and what's great about Kaufman is he did not disappoint. He followed that up with some amazing movies, you know, the adaptation movie.
Great film.
Oh,
no doubt.
Amazing.
And Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, fantastic director.
Yep.
Awesome.
All right, guys. So, any honorable mentions?
Frank?
1977's Eraserhead. Always comes up on everybody's top list as one of the craziest, weirdest, obscure, you know, bizarre movies ever.
Yeah, anything by David Lynch, I think should fit into the
category. Absolutely,
Lost
Highway, for sure, yeah. I'd throw one in as an honorable, Rubber, which is about a psychic tire that is stalking people.
That's weird.
An actual car tire.
That's bizarre.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
Got anything, Rye?
No, I'm good.
Good? All right, Jawheads, if we missed one of your favorite bizarre movies, pull up Twitter, shoot us a tweet, at CinemaJaw, and let us know what we missed. Get the discussion going. So what we're going to do now is take a break, and when we come back, we have a very special trivia segment where Ryan gets to play the guest for the very first time ever. You are going to be in the hot seat, Ryan. You're the contestant.
I don't like this at
How
all.
How do you feel?
I'm nervous. I don't know. I got bugs crawling all over me.
Frank, are you going to beat the hell out of Ryan, the movie guy? I really want to see it happen.
I can't wait.
I want him to lose his first time at trivia.
I take it very seriously.
Oh, I do too. So
very seriously.
Not to mention a cinema war and a whole lot more. So, Jawheads, stick around.
CinemaJaw is brought to you by Rocky Mountain Revival. Audio Art Journal is a podcast for all audible art. We're here to tell you a tale, sing you a song, and give you the strength to carry on. Come revive your soul. The podcast can be found on iTunes and Stitcher. Follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Rocky Mountain Revival Podcast. And by The Pajama Shop. Don't miss the $9.95 clearance sale at The Pajama Shop and save up to 85%. Hurry while supplies last. The Pajama Shop sells luxurious pajamas and loungewear for men and women, as well as sexy lingerie, bridal gowns, and gifts for women. Check them out at pajamashop.com. That's PajamaShoppe.com.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Frank T. Zidi, director, writer, producer?
A little bit, but not really.
No, okay. Well, filmmaker here in Chicago. Frank, once again, you're working on your film web series, Black.
Yep. Season 2 coming out sometime this summer. Really exciting. BlackTheWebSeries.com is where you can find us. If you like high action, if you like 24, if you like active valor, that's kind of what we are.
That's awesome. See, I like Frank. He just gets right to the freaking point.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And what's awesome, too, is that you can go online now and at least see the trailer at YouTube.
Correct. Our YouTube channel, it's youtube.com. I don't know if it's // Black the Web Series. Back the Web Series, Black the Web Series. We've got a teaser and a trailer, so it gives everybody a sense of what Season 2 is all about.
And do it, Jawheads, because I just watched Season 2 trailer. It was awesome. I loved it. So totally anticipating. Can't wait. Can't wait.
That wine's getting to you, man.
It is.
Yeah. Totally anticipating.
It's really going to be great. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, it is the bizarro episode of CinemaJaw.
Yeah, this is where I'm supposed to get hammered like you are normally. And then the Jawheads are yelling at the radios saying, like, I can't believe Matt didn't answer. And then Matt throws one of these out. I had too many PBRs.
Yeah, there we go.
You got a pool over there? You got a pool over there? I got a pool and a pond.
All right.
Pond be good for you, Matthew.
All right, Jawheads. Before we get to trivia, before we get to the cinema war, we threw a lot of items in that jaw box. Heck, why don't we open up that jaw box and see what Elias brought to the table?
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! No, what's in the box?
What's going on, guys? It has been a bizarro day, let me tell you. So
instead of Matt waking me up out of the Jawbox this morning, it was Rye.
Hello.
And Rye saw 50 Shades of Grey, and let me tell you, he has new hobbies. And so I'm just,
whoa.
Let me just say I'm glad I'm standing up right now and not sitting down.
Wow. Hey, I know this is a bizarre episode, but is that why, way too much out of the bag.
Is that why the thing is painted red?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that makes so much
right.
sense.
Oh, this
you
is
terrible.
You could
have your clamps back. Okay.
Wow.
So,
now right. I know how Matt feels those over here taking these abuse of these jokes.
Nipple clamps? Wow. Jesus, man.
I wish there were nipple clamps. Let me just say.
Oh, man. All right.
There was the hole in the jaw box. I mean, we just went from there.
Okay, so
that's for communication.
This has all gotten incredibly bizarre. Well, I just want to say,
imagine how the intern feels. He was there too. So,
TJ,
oh TJ,
we're here so we sorry you had to witness that.
Real quick, there was only two things you threw in there. Will Smith.
Besides what Rye threw in there,
who did he play? Deathstroke was the guess, but I think Frank, you might have said that this it's Deathshot, Deadshot,
Deadshot.
Deadshot is what it is.
Which so. I think Colin Farrell's character actually played in the Daredevil movie.
No, that would be Bullseye.
Bullseye, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. But Deadshot. There was actually an animated Batman series of movies by like seven different animators, and one of them was about Deadshot.
Ah. Deadshot is roughly DC's answer to Bullseye.
There you go.
Roughly.
All right.
I would say the same. I concur.
Yeah. Of course, as an expert in comics.
Right.
Yes.
And let's see, is Upstream Color still streaming on Netflix? Yes, it is. So watch it now, Jawheads.
Highly recommend it.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely do that.
All right, that's
was that
all.
It?
Yeah.
Was that all you had this week?
Yes, that's all, Matt.
Get back in that Jawbox.
All right.
All right, Jawheads. That brings us to a segment called...
Cinema!
Whoa, it sounded like you had to poop there.
Are you okay? Jesus, did you have an aneurysm or something? What just happened?
Cinema War!
You will not be the next singer for Cannibal Corpse. Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. Each week we pick a topic and debate each side and decide who the hell wins the Cinema War. Frank, you're going to be our judge, our jury, our executioner. Elias, why don't you tell the Jawheads at home what this Cinema War is all about?
Today's Cinema War topic... Will a superhero movie ever win Best Picture at the Academy Awards? Matt, you'll be fighting no way in hell. Rye, you'll be fighting of course one will win. Let this bizarre cinema war begin.
Matt, the question should not be, will a superhero movie win the Best Picture Oscar? The question should be, when will a superhero win the big prize here? The Academy is always slow to recognize genius. Look how long it took them to reward Martin Scorsese. In the next few years, the Academy will take notice and honor of the brilliance of the MCU. That's Marvel Cinematic Universe for you laymen out there.
Ryan, here we go again. Superheroes, capes, tights. You are clearly obsessed. And while I will admit, I do have fun at the popcorn-munching summer blockbusters. The deeper, more meaningful fare that is Best Picture quality is not even being approached. Let's get real here.
Matthew, let me remind you. With great power comes great responsibility. That is one of the great lines from my friend Spidey. And comic book movies have done just that. With bigger box office, filmmakers keep upping the quality of work. If you asked me this question back when Danny DeVito was waddling around as the Penguin, I might have not said yes, but with brilliant works like The Dark Knight, Winter Soldier, The Avengers, and the upcoming Avengers Age of Ultron, come on, Matt, a Best Picture prize is within our superheroes' grasp.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Dark Knight, because the only superhero film that has even come close to the Best Picture category is The Dark Knight. And frankly, there is not another cape and tights movie that even holds a candle to Christopher Nolan's masterpiece. Likely none will ever get close anytime soon. Certainly not Avengers 2 or any of the Marvel pictures.
Wow. Matt, I have to be honest here. I don't even like this cinema war because you know what? Winning the Oscar is not a big deal. You know what's a big deal? Collecting all six Infinity Stones. What Marvel has achieved here with the MCU is nothing short of masterful. Never before so many iconic characters and storylines mixed through one singular universe, just like the Academy honored fantasy film with The Lord of the Rings, giving them the best Oscar at the third film. They will do the same with the superhero genre, given that the timing is right, and it will be right.
Ryan, you're a jackass. 12 Years a Slave, Argo, The Artist, The King's Speech, Hurt Locker. These are films with impact, films that tackle meaningful subjects, much more meaningful, at least, than Hulk Smash.
Oh. Matt, the sad news here is for art house lovers, and the good news is for comic geeks like myself. The Academy is not going to have a choice pretty soon. It already seems like every fifth movie that comes out is a superhero film. In another few years, it'll be all men in tights chasing Loki around the galaxy. Superhero movies are just that, super. And soon, the Oscar will be theirs.
Box office receipts do not equal meaningful art. The best picture category is the hallowed halls of Hollywood, not Asgard. Let's put the hammer down here and hang up the tights. Are superhero movies fun? Yes. But best picture? No. It's never going to happen. Whoa. We got a crazy cinema war here. Frank, you are a judge. You're our jury. What did you think of this cinema war?
You two are button heads, as always, here on
the Button heads, as always.
I'm going to tell you. So, Rye / Bizarro, Matt, because that's really what was going on. It was creepy weird. You almost had me at Infinity Stones.
Yes, that was a really...
I'm going to tell you.
Damn.
You pulled that out of some magical pocket.
I almost conceded the whole argument at that point.
You had sewn into your ankle of your pants or something. I was impressed. That was impressive.
Maybe his utility belt?
But I agree with Matt / Bizarro Rye, because Dark Knight is by far the film that had the best opportunity. I don't think any film is ever going to come to that level again that takes itself so seriously. And it's still not a perfect movie in any way, shape, or form. And the Academy, I believe the Academy will never allow it. They are going to hold on to that last bastion of filmmaking in their world, in the studio world, in their mindset. It's got to be these films that are epic scale from an emotional standpoint, not from a production standpoint. So Matt wins.
Oh, wow.
I have never been so happy to lose a cinema war.
Yeah, I've never been so sad to win. Well, that does earn me 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave about whatever I want. And I do want to say this. You know what? We're switching roles here on this cinema war, on this cinema jaw, this whole episode. And I got to say, Ryan, in all respect and honesty, your job is freaking hard, man. I have
thank you.
I have a new respect for what you do here on Cinema Jaw.
And as do I. I mean,
no, you don't. I sit
no,
there. And I have
I'm
it easy
I'm on
every
my
week.
10th glass of wine. I'm having a good time, but I love it.
Isn't it great being me?
It's wonderful.
Oh, because it sucks being you, man.
You just
I gotta
said
say.
Welcome to cinema law, so it didn't even work.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on.
It's a new court drama, cinema law.
Oh, this is wonderful.
All right, guys, that brings us to our next segment, trivia, and trivia is sponsored this week by. And trivia works like this. Frank, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Ryan go first. There are steals, so if you don't know it, your opponent has a chance to take the question from you. What are you going to do, Frank?
Remember, I can always go to the ER with Elias
Thank
Rodriguez
you,
if I need
Thank
a lifeline.
You.
I mean, it's not
that
Did
I mention
to
the
show
newfound respect I have for Ryan the movie guy?
That's right.
It's freaking hard.
As a avid listener, mm-hmm. I know you always go first. You don't defer. They get harder as you go along.
They do.
So I'll take the first question.
Okay.
Mind you, though, Matt wrote these questions.
Yeah. Oh, crap.
Okay. And I'm horrible at keeping score.
I'm a seasoned veteran of writing these questions. And
Yeah, you
get
are
the buzzer seen. Ready.
I'm so excited now.
I have the buzzer at hand.
All right.
I'm going to ask Kate, Elias's girlfriend, who lives with him in the jaw box, to help me with keeping score. Kate, are you up to the task? Just shout.
Yeah.
All right, Kate's going to help me keep score. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
All right,
ready.
Here we go. Frank, this first question's to you. Nicolas Cage movie trivia. To avoid accusations of nepotism, Nicolas Cage changed his surname from Cage. His original last name was what?
Wow. That is not an easy one, unless it is, and I'm just totally out of the loop. I have to go. I don't know it.
Are you serious?
Don't look at me like with those eyes of accusational anger. I'm going ER right off the bat.
Wow. Really? Whoa. Yeah. Whoa.
I take it seriously, people.
This has never happened. I take it seriously. This is your last.
Yeah. So much for deferring.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. Wait a minute. I actually know it.
No, he went to the ER.
But give me the clue anyways. Right. It just popped into my head. Oh, that's exactly what it is. You don't even need to give it to me.
I feel
no,
bad.
Wait. Let's hear the clue. Let's hear it.
I don't know why I blanked, and then I just got it. Sorry.
Matt also wrote these clues, too. So
you always feel the need to point that out.
Here we go.
Yep.
I'm going to play this one up. Wow. You need help already? I can't even cope with that.
Yeah. It also is fitting that we're in the wine bar because you're drinking wine. So it's Nicholas Coppola.
Yep.
Sorry.
All right. That would be 1-0 Frank.
We wouldn't call him Nick, the foolish Nick Coppola, right?
No, we would not.
But we call him the foolish Nick Cage all the time.
Yeah. That's right. And it is because he's a bizarre actor that we're doing this. Second question is over to you, Ryan. Nicolas Cage famously named his son Kal-El in 2005 after what superhero?
Wow.
No.
You're looking at me in the Coppola thing, and you don't know that one?
No hints, guys. No hints.
Come on. I'll go Superman.
Well done.
Yes.
Pulled that one out in the nick of time.
So. All right.
All right. It is 1-1 tie score here. We got a ball game. This next question is over to Frank. Frank. Cage did make one appearance as Nicolas Coppola in what film?
I think I know it. I'm going to try to give it a shot. Otherwise, it's just going to go to buzzer. I'm going to go with Valley Girl.
No. Ryan, you have a chance for a steal. Nicolas Cage did make one appearance as Nicolas Coppola in what film?
I don't even know if he appears in the movie, but for some reason, because Francis Ford Coppola directed the movie, I'm going to say The Outsiders.
That is incorrect.
Was it Once Bitten?
No. The correct answer is actually Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Ooh, whoa, did not know.
That brings us to question number 4, and question number 4 is over to Rye, the movie guy. Nicolas Cage starred in the 1995 film Leaving Las Vegas with Elizabeth Shue, but who directed that film? This is amazing. I love watching Rye get stumped on a director question. Nicolas Cage, 1995, Leaving Las Vegas, Elizabeth Shue. Who directed that film?
What's funny, too, is I've had a little bit too much wine, but I do know this answer.
Oh, poo-poo.
I really do know how you feel at this point sitting at this chair. Because I got it. It's coming to me. You know how Matt does this? He channels.
They're cheering you on in the background,
You do have a lifeline.
Oh,
still,
I do have a lifeline.
Yes, if you want to use it.
But I don't think Frank knows this one. I love how Matt always plays this out. I don't think Frank knows this one. Oh, my God. I know this one, too.
Need an answer.
I'm going to say Nicolas Cage directed it himself.
That is incorrect. The correct answer
Frank
I'm sorry.
Gets a chance at a steal.
Wow.
Here.
Oh,
wow.
Thank you.
Hell.
Thank you for the save, Rye, the movie guy. Frank, Nicolas Cage starred in the 1995 film Leaving Las Vegas with Elizabeth Shue, but who directed that film?
Man.
You have used your lifeline.
I have used it.
Yes. Your ER.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking Soderbergh, but it's not Soderbergh. It's another guy, and it's there, and I can't think of it. Go.
The correct answer, guys, Mike Figgis.
It is Mike Figgis.
Who also directed Cold Creek Manor. Mike Figgis.
Wow.
It's a very tough question at number 4, but all right.
That
would have been my number 8.
They only get harder from here, guys.
All right.
Okay.
This is over to Frank.
Question number 5 goes to Frank. Frank, in 2010, Cage played Damian McCready, the father of Hit Girl in the movie Kick-Ass. What was his superhero alter ego name?
His superhero alter ego name?
Correct.
So you're not talking about Big Daddy. You're talking about his other name.
No.
Oh, Big Daddy. His alter ego name.
Yeah.
Yeah, Big Daddy.
Right. Okay. That like is
blatant
that's correct.
Batman ripoff.
that would make the score, I believe, 2-1. Is that correct, Kate? All right, 2-1, Frank. And the next question is over to Rye the Movie Guy. Question number 6 to Rye the Movie Guy. Nicolas Cage was in another Las Vegas movie in 1992, Honeymoon in Vegas, alongside James Caan and what actress?
Ooh, boy, oh boy. I'm pretty sure I know this one, but I have been dying sitting over on this couch to be able to say this word, take me to the ER.
Whoa!
Whoa!
Trip to the ER, Elias Rodriguez. What is the clue for question number 6?
Your clue is she has a lot of sex in the city.
Wow, a lot of sex in the city, and I don't like her already. It is, boy, look at how I, hold on.
Oh.
Ooh. Brain fart there, right?
It's funny how you can't think of the person right when you're on their spot.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to think I'm poo-pooing trivia. I got it, though. Hold on 1 second. It's
Mike Figgis.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
There you go.
Pulled it out at the last second. Sarah Jessica Parker.
2-2. All right.
Well done.
2-2. We got a ball game. We got a ball game. This next question is over to Frank Zidi. Frank, National Treasure was a big hit for Cage and launched a new franchise. Who directed that piece of shit?
Wow. Who directed National Treasure?
This is question number 7. Difficult one. Who directed National Treasure?
I don't know.
Wow.
Rye, you have a chance for a steal. Who directed National Treasure 1996?
I got to say, I apologize to the Jawheads for... I didn't write these questions. I don't know anybody who would know who directed National Treasure.
I don't even think Nicholas...
I can take three guesses.
I'm going to take a guess, though. Okay. I'm going to take a stab. No, I'm just saying, I know it's going to be wrong. I'm just taking an absolute stab. I'll say it's... I really don't, actually. I have no clue.
The correct answer is John Turteltaub.
Turteltaub.
Turteltaub. Never heard of him.
Elias, have I ever asked a question like that in my life?
No, that's pretty obscure.
Pretty obscure. Really? It was a freaking like number one at the box office movie.
This is the last bizarre episode, I promise, Jawheads.
Number one's a little generous. I mean,
jeez.
I think it was at least the hit of that weekend.
Well, that weekend, you're right.
All right, it's a tie, right?
Tie two to two.
This next one is over to Frank. Frank, you can win it.
It's over to him.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
Ooh. It's over to him.
Hey, hold on, everything. I know here. You want me to
as
lose
as much as I want.
At least
it.
Give me a
it's
shot
over
here,
to him.
You okay, jag bag.
Rye, you can win it right here.
All right.
With a walk off, or it goes down to the jawbreaker. Rye, he called himself Nicolas Cage. After what Marvel superhero? And I'm so happy you got this question on a tie.
Well, it's the Bizarro episode, so I should know this.
You should.
Let me channel the couch that I'm sitting on.
You used your lifeline.
All right, are you ready? I'm going to go with Daredevil. Damn it!
That is incorrect.
I knew he played Daredevil.
That is incorrect. Frank, you have a chance at a steal here. Nicolas Cage changed his surname to Cage after
what?
Listen
to these questions, Marvel Jawheads.
Superhero.
What an absolute jackass Matt Kay is.
I am.
These are great questions.
I'm saying a silent prayer that it is Luke Cage.
Wow.
Yes!
Booyah!
Yes! Frank Zidi wins this week's Cinema Jaw. Cinema Trivia.
Hey, who is Luke Cage?
Luke Cage!
Power Man.
Yeah, big muscle dude.
Yes,
what?
Yeah.
Muscular.
This is what I lost on?
Luke Cage?
Yeah, he's
Luke Cage.
Luke Cage is
awesome.
Forget
that Turteltaub Figgis stuff. You got to know Luke Cage to win
right.
Cinema Trivia.
Wow.
My pulse is racing. I think I just threw up in my mouth.
That was one of the most epic trivias ever in Cinema Jaw history.
I'm so pissed at Matt's questions.
Guys, can we get a handshake here? That was a fantastic
well
trivia.
Done.
Well, guys, that brings us to the end of another Cinema Jaw. It's always so sad. What did I forget?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Good to go.
Okay.
I was going to say, was there a jawbreaker that you wanted a joke around
age.
With or age? Or
I didn't write one.
Okay,
so
that's fine.
So
yeah.
Who's older, you or me?
That's fine.
Make a guess.
Oh, you know what? Hang on, hang on.
No. Don't bring it up.
That's fine.
No,
yeah,
don't.
Why not?
That's what the audience expects.
Why? Because you know?
No, I have no idea.
They expect two choices.
I have no idea what's going
totally.
And there's
totally.
No right answer. I look forward to it every time.
Totally.
I can't believe there's a Cage superhero. What is
Luke
going
Cage.
On?
Yeah.
You knew Matt was asking. I knew this guy was going to go out of his way to make sure I lost.
Yeah, your either ors are always the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
I have a response to an either or. I've always thought about it. I'm like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right, guys, just in case there was a tie, we call it a jawbreaker here on Cinema Jaw. Here's the jawbreaker. Closest to Nicolas Cage's age. Ryan, what do you got?
Nick Cage. I'll say lock me in at 51.
All right, Elias, lock Ryan in at 51. Frank, what do you think? How old is Nicolas Cage?
In the sheer rules of the Price is Right, I'm going 52.
52. Give that one to Ryan. He is actually dead on, 51 years old.
Nice.
Give him a ding here.
Well played.
Yeah, can I get a ding?
Let's give him a ding.
Matt hates giving me a ding. Thank you. Thank you, Matthew.
Satisfying.
You get your ding. Guys, that brings us to the end of a quite exhausting Cinema Jaw for myself, but amazing. I got to thank our guest, Frank. Thank you for bearing with us through this bizarre episode. It's been quite bizarre.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm a big fan of Cinema Jaw. Folks, listen to their podcast. It is awesome. Check them out every single time they come out. You won't be disappointed.
And one more time for the Jawheads at home, where can they find your stuff online?
BlacktheWebSeries.com is our main website. You can find all of our episodes otherwise on YouTube, on Facebook. We have a Twitter page as well, at Black Team Leader. And we've got that coming out, and hopefully in the future more projects after that.
And I do want to just say the Jawheads, we planned this one for Frank because he's such a great guest that we knew that we could be bizarre, if you will, in front of him.
Yes.
Yeah. It was entertaining, to say the least. I just hope that you switch back. Otherwise, there'll be a hole and a rip in the time-space continuum.
Yeah.
There's no chance I'm sitting on this couch ever again.
Yeah. Frank the Bunny is going to come next time. So
good times.
All right, Jawheads, we got to thank our sponsors.
All the sponsors, and especially the new 400.
Yeah, they have the best prices in Chicago, and they have a full liquor bar.
They do?
Yeah, and you can check out what's playing at thenew400.com.
And you thank them for their support.
Yeah, right? That's your line.
Yeah, and I think we thank them for their support.
He's pointing at me like I forgot something. And we got to thank the best engineer in the business, Elias Rodriguez.
In the business.
Wow, he just goes the whole
It's
business.
A big industry, and you're the best.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for letting me be a part of this awesome, bizarre episode. I love it. Seriously.
Shout-outs to TJ, the intern.
Yeah, big shout-out to TJ.
Hey, TJ, say hi.
Hey.
That's it.
Hey.
Go.
You're so mean to TJ.
Hey, the guy's drinking wine. He's smashed.
He's going home. He's going to be bitter. All right, Jawheads, thanks for listening. So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.